Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
When the sisters are away, the bastards will play. It's time for the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Boston Fame 2013, a one-on-one special.
Bastards and wenches, please rise for the Boston National Anthem.
For Boston, for Boston, we'll sing our hearts and pray. For Boston, this one comes up my way. And ever with a right shot as they bomb to touch me no more in the world. It's come for Boston, for Boston, our glory is all
Alright, King Baby Duck here at the Boston Festival of Indie Games. I am here trying out the new game, High Strangeness, and I'm here with the developer of the game, Ben Shostak. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade.
Hey.
So tell us a little bit about High Strangeness. Where did this idea originate from?
Well, the game itself is it's a retro action-adventure game where you get the ability to switch between 8 and 16-bit worlds. And kind of the inspiration for the game came from Steve Jenkins. He wrote the game. He goes by Crystal Labs. He kind of wanted to come up with a type of game that kind of really evokes the feel of chiptune music and just kind of the meshing of different console generations and styles. And so he kind of developed the design for the game, and you have these different art styles, and part of it is a watercolor kind of abstract glimpse of reality that melds the 8 and 16 together. But over the course of the game, you kind of unlock the mystery of what these shadow men are doing in your house. But when you wake up, these shadow men are in your house, wandering around, and they leave a crystal skull. The crystal skull that you find gives you the ability to change between these dimensions, and your talking cat reveals more of the mystery as you go.
Very cool. And I know I've seen a lot of games try to do the whole back and forth thing between, you know, graphics, but this is probably the first one where I see it actually serve a purpose. So tell our listeners, like, in High Strangeness, what do the differences of 8-bit and 16-bit affect the game itself?
The changes between the two styles, it's not just graphic style. You're transitioning really between two console generations. So in the 8-bit world, you really move in four directions, and you have just kind of a little pokey jab attack. So it's kind of like the NES style of game where you have more limited movement, but in the 16-bit world, you have full 8-way movement, and you can run faster and do some combos. So that's kind of more like the JRPG and action adventure style from 16-bit Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis era. But also, there's differences in the world. There's some paths that are only visible in one dimension. So switching to 8 and 16 allows you to see more of the environment and get more of the atmosphere.
And I did notice that when with a couple of areas. One of the first areas was with the bridge, and you had to actually time yourself to run quickly. And that's something you can't do in the 8-bit version because it only has a normal speed, whereas in the 16-bit, you have the ability to run. So you have to use that in order to cross faster, otherwise you'll find yourself dead. And then, right after that, in the 8-bit world, find out that there's a little path hidden in the rocks, that you can't find in the 16-bit. So you've got to really figure out, like, okay, which style am I able to solve the puzzle from? And I think it's a very unique way of a gameplay element I've never really seen before.
Thanks. Yeah, and part of it is we're trying to kind of subtly hint at the switching and that there's something wrong. We're showing kind of like these corrupted sprites that show up, and they kind of start popping on the screen when you're in the wrong mode. That's kind of just a subtle hint that we're putting in there.
Yeah, I did kind of notice a little bit of the sprites here and there, kind of like an homage to the old school glitches you might find on some of those NES and even Atari games. So I thought that was a really nice touch of, I don't want to say subtlety, but a touch of old school inspiration. And that's what this whole game feels like it's all about. It jumps back and forth between the 8-bit and the 16-bit that you mentioned. And what I love about it is it bridges the gap between the two, the whole 12-bit that you are pushing, the 12-bit aspect of it, meeting right in between. So I really got to give you guys props for doing something that you really don't see in the whole retro gaming that we're seeing these days coming back.
Oh, thank you.
Tell me a little bit more about the company that you guys run, the whole developing.
My company, Barnyard Intelligence Games, is basically me and I have five other guys helping out with the game. And we've got another... I'm the main programmer as well, so I'm kind of doing all of the programming and some jack-of-all-trades type of stuff with, doing a little bit of pixel stuff and some writing changes and stuff. But for the most part, the game was thought up by Steve Jenkins. And so Steve came to me a few years ago and said, you know, hey, I've got this game idea. I want to turn it into something real. And it was originally in Game Maker. And it's basically I came up with an XName prototype, and I ported that to Unity. So five of us are currently working on the game, and we also have music in there from Rich Freeland. He was originally on the project, Disaster Piece, and so he contributed some music to it.
The guy who did the Fez soundtrack.
Yeah. And our current main musician is Dino Leonetti. He's from Cheap Dinosaurs, and he does some awesome chiptune stuff. It's in the game.
It's really cool. And is this Barnyard's first game, or is this like your third or fourth? Or
This is our second title.
All right.
The first title was kind of a Contra-style free-for-all deathmatch game, where it kind of implemented the trappings of a modern first-person shooter in a 2D platformer.
That's really cool. What's it called? Just so our listeners can check that one out, too.
Sure. That game is Agent Moo Maximum Overdeath. And if you go to Barnyard Intelligence Games, we've got links to the Xbox Live Indie Games page for that, so you can check it out. It's just a buck, but it has online multiplayer on Xbox Live.
All right. Sounds terrific. Now, High Strangeness, are you looking to release this on Steam? Are you looking to port it to consoles? What's your game plan for it?
Sure. We're going to be releasing next year for PC, current and next-gen consoles. And we're currently on Steam Greenlight, so if you want to check it out, give us an upvote on there. And we just recently started working with a publisher, Midnight City. And Midnight City is kind of set up like a record label for indie games. So they stay completely out of the IP and stuff, so they don't tell us what game to make. We develop our game, and they help us out with marketing and distribution and stuff.
That's excellent. That's something a lot of these publishers need to really do, is just stay out of the developer's way and let them create the game they really want to create. And that's great. So, Ben, thank you so much for joining us here on B3 in High Strangeness, coming out in 2014 on next-gen consoles and PC. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm here with Samuel from Trinom Games, who is showing off Puzzle Axe. Welcome to Boston Bastard Brigade.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about Puzzle Axe. What's the premise of the game?
Puzzle Axe is a jigsaw puzzle game, but with some twists in it. You have different mechanics with different different levels, and there's animation through the puzzle pieces. There's a big storyline about a king and his two sons that want to have the throne. And it's a big adventure game, but with jigsaw puzzles in it.
So how did the concept of the jigsaw puzzle gameplay element originate from? Like, who came up with the idea for that?
François, the part owner of Trinom, had the idea to remix the kind of style of the jigsaw puzzles. Like, he liked the jigsaw puzzle, but he found an idea to remix it with animations and physics stuff and lighting stuff. So, yeah, that came from François.
So, as the game progresses, I can imagine that the puzzles get a lot more challenging?
It can be. Each puzzle it really is different from another. It's really different mechanics. It's not really evolving, but it's just like unique mechanics through all of the puzzle. But some puzzle combines two different mechanics of other puzzle, and it can be more difficult.
Yeah. I noticed that there are, like, sometimes you gotta, like, defeat a monster and change them into being good.
Yeah.
Sometimes you gotta rebuild, like, buildings. Like, you had me try out the one where, I think it was one of the first monsters, and then right after that, you had to rebuild the kingdom that that the monster destroyed.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're playing with, like, because you have a powerful axe that can destroy the world and rebuild it, so we're playing with destroying stuff, rebuilding it with a different image, so that's pretty much.
So, as the game progresses, does your axe become more powerful? Does it level up a little bit?
At the beginning it's broken, so you have to use your logic to make the puzzles, but then you repair it and it's powerful, so you can change more stuff with it.
Where are you looking to release Puzzle Axe? I noticed that you have it on tablets or anything and all that. And are you looking to try to bring it onto like Steam or any of the next-gen consoles?
For now, it's iOS and Android. We're building it for tablets and phones. But I don't know, maybe in a year or two, we'll bring it to other platforms. But now it's really for tablet gaming and phone.
Yeah, I can obviously see it like on something like the Wii U or the 3DS. It's something that takes advantage of the whole touchscreen aspect of it.
Yeah, we would love to have our game on a 3DS or Wii U, but we'll see.
Yeah. So, when are you expecting to release the game? Is it later this year, early next year?
We are planning to release it in December. So, we're working on polishing it more, testing it out, but it should be released in December.
All right, fantastic. Just in time for the holidays.
Yeah.
So, Samuel, thank you so much for joining me here on B3. Puzzle Axe coming to iOS and Android devices too?
Or yeah, Android devices.
This December.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you again. Okay, I'm here at Spearhead Games booth. Actually, it's Unreal Engine's booth. Spearhead Games with Malik showing off the title Tiny Brains. Welcome to the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Hi.
So tell our listeners a little bit about Spearhead Games, because you're just a brand new company and this is your first title that you're going to be publishing.
That's actually true. We just started working on the project and the company about a year ago, actually. So we're from Montreal. A lot of our team members come formerly from AAA industry, Electronic Arts, Ubisoft, things like that. And basically, me and my co-founders wanted to go a bit, take a step back a bit from the big, huge titles like Assassin's Creed and things like that, and basically have the flexibility to try new things, different things, discover new ways of building games, actually.
But you had mentioned that you used to be at Ubisoft and you used to be at EA with a bunch of other guys. And you used to work on like Prince of Persia, and you mentioned Dead Space 3.
Yes.
So that is a very big jump compared to what you're showing off right now with Tiny Brains.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very different in a lot of ways, basically. The way of working, basically, on a big title like Assassin or even Prince of Persia, you have hundreds of people working together. Us, we're barely 10, and we basically sit on a circle and work together. Whenever we want to talk about something, everyone turns around. So the actual experience of building games is very different. It's very much more organic, much more faster, basically. Everything goes faster because there's not a lot of layers of decision making or anything like that.
Right, there isn't like someone in the higher ups telling you, I don't know if we can do something like that, but you're basically your own boss.
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much it. And we also do a lot of playtests, so almost weekly since we started building the game. So everyone on the studio kind of sits behind people playing the game, and we see how it's going. And basically, instead of doing a lot of theory and things like that, we get very hands-on with the way we build the game. We iterate on it, we look at how people do, and we're a small group, and we can talk about things, observe things, and act super fast, basically, on any issue.
That's really cool. So the game Tiny Brains, you play as four mice who have been, would you say, intellectually upgraded?
Yeah, more than intellectually, actually. They all have superpowers now. So each of them has a physics-based power, such as like force-pushing, force-pull objects. So one can teleport and switch position with objects. One can create physical blocks out of thin air. So all of these powers are physics-based, and they're complementary. It says that the players have to work together and each use somehow their unique ability to figure out how to solve any type of challenge in the game.
So how did you decide on which four powers to use for these characters? Because I reckon that you brainstormed a bunch of ideas.
Yeah.
How did you come about finalizing it to the four that you mentioned previously?
So there were different criteria that make us pick these. So first of all, the readability of the power. Like, since we wanted the game to be of a broader understanding audience, we wanted the casual gamer basically to get what's going on. So we went with powers that you see, and you know, a force push is basically you see the thing moving away, so you understand what's going on. Same thing with the force pull. At the same time, we wanted to have a lot of depth for like the more experienced players, the more hardcore gamers. So we made sure that the powers we had a lot of possible gameplays you could do with them, especially when you start including synergies, combos, and all that. So these two things put together, first of all, the accessibility, the readability of the powers, but at the same time, the depth. There were very few powers that fit both at the same time, and also four at the same time. So,
So I just finished with the demo of this, and at the end of the demo, the mice escape into the real world. So what sort of obstacles can players expect to come across for the mice to go up against in the real world?
Actually, that was a trap. They do end up in the basement.
Oh.
Yeah. You think you can... the scientist who made the lab is not that easy to outsmart, so the mice will have to work quite hard to get away.
So the scientist that you are technically going up against is five steps ahead.
Yeah, well, he tries to, but, you know, four against one, so the lab animals do have a chance of actually winning, so we'll see what happens in the story in the final game.
Right, and I noticed, like, one of the first creatures that you go up against are, like, the chickens and the super chickens. What sort of other bees can you reveal that we're going to be going up against in Tiny Brains?
There's one you can see sometimes in this set. Game. There are like other types of enemies. One of them is an explosive type of enemy, so the players can do a lot of things with it, especially with the physics and, you know, explosions and physics always come together, and some other things. We do might have some additional secret characters, things like that. So there's a lot of things going on in the game.
Right, I know you got to be hush-hush because you want to keep some little cool secrets from
the game.
Yeah, well,
we don't want to spoil things for our players, basically.
Absolutely.
Things to discover in the game, so...
Right. So, there's a lot of co-op on here. In-person co-op we're doing right They're here. Is there going to be an online mode for players to go try out?
Yes, well, we started building first the couch co-op experience, that thing where you're actually sitting next to the person. But since the game is all about co-op, we wanted to make sure that players could have the opportunity to experience that, even if they can bring someone to their house, basically. So we are definitely working on an online component for the game.
So let's say, hypothetically, you were playing this, and you can't find anyone to play with at the moment, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of people online. How would it work offline? Is there do all the other characters, are they controlled by AI, or is it a totally different process?
Well, AI would be quite hard to do for us. We're a small group, and with the emergent aspect of the gameplay, it's just a challenge that we didn't want to take on. Instead, what you can do as a single player is actually swap in real time between the characters. So you actually have access to all four characters, and it's basically the game is jump in, jump out between one to four players. So you could actually start alone, someone jumps in at some point, you start playing co-op, then two more people, someone leaves. So you can play it any time between one or four players. And the cool thing is that the levels will dynamically change to adapt to the number of players. So if a puzzle, for example, would have been only solvable with two players normally, actually if someone jumps out or if you're playing alone, the level will adapt so that it's actually fun play single player as well.
All right, yeah, that's a pretty cool idea. That way, each time you play it, depending on how many players you have, it's a different experience each time.
Oh, absolutely. So the single player experience is more like a classical puzzle experience where you have to think using different tools to solve the puzzles. The two player experience is more tactical. You have access to more abilities, but you're two and you coordinate. Four player is more like the party kind of experience. You're four, you have fun, and so you really can replay the game many times with different people, and it's going to be something fresh.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And we saw the story mode, we saw challenge modes. Are there going to be any other modes that are going to be added to the game? Yeah,
absolutely. Besides the different types of challenges, there are two unlockable modes which are secret for now. And there's also Tiny Soccer, which is basically a soccer game with a ball, 2v2 with the superpower. So it's kind of superheroes playing soccer, basically.
Oh, okay. Kind of like... I don't know if you saw in a recent Rayman Legends, they had a little bit of something like that. They had a soccer.
Yeah, possibly. I haven't played that game yet. I'm too busy shipping the game right now.
Understandable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of thing. Yeah, it's basically another mode where you can have fun with your friends and replay a lot. It's a lot of fun, actually. Teamwork again, but with a bit of competitive twist with the same powers, basically.
That's awesome. And for Tiny Brains, you're saying PC, and it's going to be also a launch title for PlayStation 4.
Yes, absolutely. We're working right now on the PlayStation 4 build. It's going pretty well, so we still hope to be on launch right on time for that. We're also going to ship on PS3 as well at the same date, so November 15th.
That's fantastic. Malik, thank you so much for joining us here on B3. Tiny Brains coming soon to PC, PS3, PS4, and any other consoles? Or
we're working on that, but nothing yet for sure, so hopefully. Right.
Well,
yes.
Fortunately, I'll have PS4 day one, so... I'll be looking forward to this on that. So definitely, it's going to be a downloadable title, correct?
Yes, absolutely, on PlayStation Network and PC, we'll see.
All right, Rivik, Malik, thank you so much. And I really look forward to seeing what happens in the story for Tiny Brains.
All right, thanks to you.
I am coming to you from the Guerrilla Tactics booth at, I was about to say PAX East, I'm so used to saying that, at the Boston Festival of Indie Games at King Randall's Party, and please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Guerrilla One. I'm the programmer and developer of King Randall's Party.
So King Randall's Party is a tower defense game, but how does it differ from other tower defense games?
So it's a side view game, so you look at it like you do Mario, and except instead of running along and killing the Koopa Troopers, they're coming to get your castle. And that's the idea. The king wants to get the royal treasury, and you're the royal treasurer trying to stop his men from getting there.
So in the game, you play as a royal treasurer, and you have different sorts of like weapons and different types of gear to which you can try to stop your king from getting his money.
Right, so you're like an ancient times MacGyver, right? You're putting together all these traps. You don't have weapons, so you're taking these automatic writing machines and making them throw quills at the enemies, or grabbing some chicken soup from the kitchen and using it to dump on the enemies. And you know, that's the kind of guy you are. You're not really this rah-rah front lines. You're this clerk, you know? Then that's the kind of traps that you build.
It's basically watching a guy try to take on a knight with a giant sword with a plunger, basically.
Yeah, I mean, booby traps, you know, and then you run away. That's the, yeah.
Yeah. So, in the game, how does the challenge raise as the game progresses?
So, we have different types of enemies which traverse the environment in very different ways. You have mountain women who will climb up your walls. You have engineers who will build bridges and ladders. And that really changes the game. So, not only is each environment different, but at the same time, the enemies move across them differently. And that adds a very wide variety of challenges.
I overheard before I was starting to play the game, you've been in the industry, the gaming industry, for quite some time. So what are the titles that you used to work on back in the day?
So when I got my start, I was working as an intern at Big Huge Games. We made Rise of Nations, Rise of Legends. I went on to assist with production at Firaxis, who makes Civilization, also Railroads and some other titles. And then I moved on to educational games and really moved into that industry many years before I started doing my own stuff.
And I had heard that you are still interested in doing sort of an edutainment style sort of game. So can you picture yourself adding some sort of edutainment aspect to King Randall's Party?
King Randall's Party, probably not. But that is something I think about quite often. I would like, you know, when I have kids someday, for them to walk in and be like, oh, I played, you know, Halo 8, and I learned trigonometry. You know, that's kind of the goal, but who knows when we'll get there.
I used to remember as a kid, when it came to, like, entertainment titles, I had this idea where you would take something like Doom, but then add, like, arithmetic, like, questions in order to kill the monster.
Yeah, educational games and sort of matching gameplay to what you're trying to learn is really hard. I mean, we've had scenarios when I was making those games where we'd have like a 4-star general walk in and be like, I want a game about Rust. You know, I don't play games much, but I'm thinking like that Halo game. And we're all like, yeah, okay. You know, so it's a challenge. It's a very interesting challenge.
Because not only do you have to make it educational, you have to make it entertaining. And that is sometimes difficult, but these days in the world where we've got stuff like Yo Gabba Gabba as a TV show, and then you've got a company like over there, Muzzy Lane, doing stuff that not only teaches people, informs people how this world works, but also gives them some sort of an entertainment value, it's becoming quite easier these days.
Yeah, I mean, the challenge is there, but there's definitely a lot more companies that are interesting in addressing that challenge. Muzzy Lane is a great company. I love those guys over there. Fable Vision's another company. You know, so there are definitely people who are interested in finding alternative ways to educate kids these days and adults for continuing education.
Yeah. Right, because you don't want to say it's a kid's game because, you know, that's sort of like, oh, that's going to turn a lot of people off. You want to say it's a family game.
Right, no, it has to be like Civilization, where you're playing it and you learn why pottery is important because Gandhi kicked your ass because he had pottery and you didn't, right?
Right.
Or like in King Randall's Party, like how physics work and how collapsing works because those elements are in the game. And it's just a part of the game, but, you know, the kid's still going to learn, or the adult's going to be like, well, maybe when I'm building my shed, I should put some structural supports in, right? That's obviously a far-fetched example, but that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
Right, absolutely. And going back to King Richard's Party, you're actually putting this game on up to Kickstarter right now.
Right, so King Randall's Party just launched on Kickstarter yesterday at like 11 p.m. I haven't even seen who's on it. You can download the alpha at the Kickstarter page so people can get a great idea for what it's about. It's for PC. We want to port it to Mac, Linux, Android, and stuff. Yeah, that's about it. We got some great prizes.
Awesome. And, you know, Kickstarter has been phenomenal when it comes to a lot of these video games being put on there. Like, recently I put up cash for, like, Armacrog and Mighty No. 9 and the new Shantae video game. How do you feel Kickstarter has been treating, you know, the video game industry as a whole?
Kickstarter might be a little agnostic about the video game industry, but Kickstarter is you know, a great platform for funding games. And a lot's been said about that, so I won't go too into it. But what I really like is that people can get involved with the game, right?
Yeah.
So, like, one of our reward levels is we let people design a background element in the game. And we know people aren't all artists, right? So what we do is we provide them with an outline of a house, and they can put anything on there, right? It's like Etch-a-Sketch, you know? You don't even have to draw. You can just be like, stupid cat here, flower vase there. And then you send that to us, and our artist will finish it in King Randall's Party style and put it in the game. And then suddenly you have this really cool background piece which you design. And that's the kind of thing you can't really get with the traditional publishing model.
Absolutely. It's reaching out basically to the gamers.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting people involved, and as an indie developer, that's really exciting. Like, getting people playing your game. I've seen some people today try some stuff in my game that I never even thought of. I was like, what? You can do that? Like, yeah, so it's exciting.
So, King Randall's Party, what is your initial goal on Kickstarter right now?
It's $21,000, and that will provide enough to get some artwork, some music, and to get the programming done in about 6 months' time. So, the stretch goals are there, but I'm focusing on making sure it really gets out in 6 months. I don't want people to wait.
And what's good about this game is sometimes you can just put down a bare minimum, like $10 or $15, boom, that's basically like you've already pre-ordered the game.
Yeah, and I've actually got an early bird special up there, so you can get some of the higher reward tiers at a lower donation level if you're fast.
All right. So, if it goes all through Kickstarter, if you find success in that, what is your initial release goal? Like, when are you planning to release this?
About midway through next summer.
All right, yep. Awesome. Gorilla One, thank you so much for joining us on B3. King Randall's Party, be sure to look out for that on Kickstarter. Download the pre-alpha beta just so you know what you can get yourself into. And if you love what you see, and I'm pretty sure you will, go out and support it.
It's a party.